This looks like a question for Dr. Hodges and Dr. Bates. Communities that receive calls from YKHC regarding COVID positive cases typically would like to know at the time of the call how many weeks or days have gone by since the test was collected. Can you talk about what is considered a quote new case when the lab results may take a certain amount of time to receive from the ANMC lab or other labs that provide the processing?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And we have a lot of cases or labs that have been delayed lately through nobody's fault. There's just a large volume of tests that have to be processed statewide. And we primarily send our tests to the ANMC lab, and they've been wonderful partners, but they've been having trouble sourcing some reagents. And so it's been difficult. They have sent our labs onto the state lab, and we're very grateful for the turnaround time and the help with the state lab. I know we gave you a ton of extra tests recently, and we're very grateful for that. But identifying or the time that the test is done in a village that's small might be a possible identifying feature of it. And that's why we don't release the date the test was done for the most part, because we want to really work hard to protect the privacy of our patients who are testing positive sometimes in the villages. Now, we do work with the village councils and the quarantine officers and the quarantine workers and the COVID coordinators in each village. So if the village has a person who can help somebody on quarantine, we give that information to the patient themselves so that they can reach out and get help. And that way they're the ones that are sort of disclosing their own status to the village council, and then they can get the help that they need. And that's been really effective. So we work closely with the tribal councils to do that.
Great. This question looks like it's for Dr. Hodges, Dr. Bates, and Dr. Anders. What's the word on current turnaround time for test results? I heard that results are 7 to 14 days delayed. Can you speak a little bit about it?
I can start and then I'll let Dr. Anders finish. So for the labs that we do here in-house in our PCR test that we have here in Bethel, which is the Cepheid test, we have limited supplies, but we're able to use that in specific circumstances. It takes about 24 hours to get results on those tests. Oftentimes much less than 24 hours, but that's sort of what we tell people. And of course the rapid tests get results within an hour. We have plenty of rapid tests, and we use those on our symptomatic patients who need to be tested because they're having symptoms. And for our send out tests, generally speaking, we're getting the positive results back in about 5 to 7 days. But recently that has increased because of some challenges that is happening nationwide and statewide processing these tests that have to come from our region.
Oh, Dr. Anders, you might be muted.
Just to add in where ANMC is, our ANMC has a total of 4 different high capacity analyzers. So that's where we're receiving regional tests, and the majority of our tests on campus are run through those. The issues that Dr. Hodges referred to, reagent shortage, so on the 2 Panther Hologics, which have high capacity, we only have had reagent to run around 250 tests a day on those. And then the 2 Abbott M2000s are both undergoing servicing now. I think a lot of it is we've run those analyzers at full capacity for months and months now. And so the Abbott engineers are trying to get those fully serviced and deep cleaned to start running again. And those aren't going right now. Traditionally, we had run approaching 2,000 tests per day. And so when we're down to 250 per day, we had to quickly pivot and send states on or tests on to the state of Alaska to try to help with meeting the demand. It's been a challenging. We don't even meet our campus needs for employees right now. And so the testing delays right now are unfortunately very challenging. We hope to get a little bit better maybe by the end of this week, but we'll see.
Then I guess one thing I'll add from a state perspective, you know, many states have big commercial labs that they depend on. We have not had that in the state. And so we've really depended on these point of care things like this Cepheid that Dr. Hodges has, hospitals like ANMC standing up, and then the state lab, which isn't really designed to be kind of a high throughput commercial lab. We did over 20,000 tests just this past week at the state lab. So it continues to just expand quickly. We do have our first commercial lab in the state, so hoping some volume will be able to go there. But then we're working really closely with HHS to continue to get supplies and reagents and resources, knowing the time and distance and limitation. So some of the kind of more rapid testing supplies we have been able to continue to advocate for. Those have been running very dry recently, so continue to work with HHS to try to get supplies, particularly for your region, given the really high rates of disease. We really want to make sure that we get those as quickly as possible so those results come back. So we're regularly in conversations with the federal government to try to advocate for those supplies and resources.
Essentially, we've maxed out our internal capacity with our internal lab here at YKHC in Bethel. We use Alaska Native Medical Center's lab to the greatest extent possible. We use the state of Alaska's lab to the greatest extent possible. And then we also have a commercial, large commercial lab that's out of state that we use. And we will use whichever method that is the fastest at that given time. And then lastly, we also purchased a very large analyzer that can do 1,000 per day. Unfortunately, due to the national backlog and logistical issues, we did order that this summer. It's delayed though, and it's not going to be delivered to us until February. And we'll have more information on that the closer we get to February. And then once we get it here, it's going to probably take a month before we're able to get it up and running. We have to get folks certified on it. We have to do tests on it and the like. So we are trying every single method possible to get our customers the fastest test, because the longer it takes you to get a test back, we know the more ineffective it can be. So we are trying everything we can.
Great. A couple of quick questions here that might be semi-related is, how accurate is a rapid test, and can a common cold or strep throat be mistaken on testing strips for COVID-19?
A great question. So rapid tests can have a lot of different meanings to it. So there are kind of three different buckets of tests that we think of. So we think of molecular tests, which are like the Abbott Now and the PCR, the Cepheid, the Panther, all these names that you've been hearing. Then there's this other bucket of tests called antigen tests, and these are not looking for the actual molecule. They're looking for a little spike off of it. And those are going to be like the Binex Now, the Cepheid, and I know some are being used in your region. And then there's antibody tests, and that looks to see if you had a previous infection. All three of those can have rapid results. And so it's important that you kind of, we're talking about each category within each of those. The blood test and antibody test is not a good test to see if you have active infection. So I'm just going to take that one and not talk about that one. But then the molecular test and the antigen test are the two that we use most commonly. And when used in the right clinical scenario, they can be very accurate. So they can be very good tests to use, but they are done in combination with a clinician. So if there's someone symptomatic and they're positive, that's really reassuring. Someone is negative, but still is feeling sick, we have to worry that we might have a false negative. So there's a higher chance of a false negative than a false positive. And so it's really important, if people aren't feeling well, even with a negative test, they stay away from others because they may have COVID-19, even though that test was negative. So that's the most important thing that I'd want to emphasize there. None of these tests are tests that are cross-react with things like strep throat. So no test is perfect, but if you get strep throat, these aren't going to turn positive. And in general, they, for the most part, have very, very low chance of being falsely positive, much higher chance of being falsely negative. Others?
Yeah, this is Joe McLaughlin. I think you hit the main points there, Dr. Zink. They are good tests, and used in the right setting, they're very, very helpful, useful tools for diagnosing COVID. So as Dr. Zink had mentioned, the one concern we have is that if you have signs and symptoms of COVID and you test negative, especially if it's on one of these rapid tests, then that makes us concerned about the possibility of a false negative test result. And so we would want to make sure that that person is getting hopefully a PCR test, and maybe Dr. Hodges can speak to what's happening in the YK. But the PCR test is done at the State Public Health Lab and some other national reference labs. And that's the most sensitive and specific test that we have. And so that's what we usually use when we want to make sure we get confirmation of, for example, somebody who might have COVID. So I don't know, Dr. Hodges.
No, I think that's accurate, and that's the process that we follow. I was wondering if either one of you could address the idea that there might be false positives out there, because I think that some people think there might be false positives, and that's a question that comes up a lot when we talk to people about their test results.
Sure. You know, the false positive error rate is low for these tests, for both the molecular and most of the antigen tests as well. You know, there's some variability from test to test, but by and large, if you get a positive test result, you can usually count on it. There may be circumstances under which, let's say we're in a village where there really has been no COVID activity at all, and somebody for some reason is tested and they're asymptomatic. When you have a low probability of infection, because we're not aware of any of the virus circulating in that community, and the person's asymptomatic and they test positive, it's possible that that could be a false positive. But those types of situations are pretty rare right now. We've got so much COVID activity occurring throughout Alaska that if you have a positive test, by and large, I'm gonna trust that it's a positive. I don't know if there's anything more you would add to that, Ellen.
I think the only other thing that I would add is we get that question all the time. I feel fine. There's no way my COVID test could be positive. Or this just feels like my allergies. There's no way my COVID test could be positive. But it usually is positive. It's really highly likely that it is positive. So we see people who have no symptoms. We see people with very mild symptoms, and we see people with symptoms that look like everything else in everyday life, runny nose, just not feeling well, some vomiting, some GI upset, but they can still be spreading tremendous amounts of virus to other people. And while they may be fine and have very few symptoms, others around them may have very significant symptoms. And I think that's one of the really big challenges of this disease. I wish that we just all got some big rash that we could identify and say, that's it. But the reality is you can't diagnose this clinically very well at all. That's why we use these tests. And that's why it's so, so important to get tested at the beginning of any symptoms that you have, and that you continue to take these precautions, like wearing a mask, washing your hands, and keeping that distance, even if you feel fine. And so that's why we're asking all Alaskans to do that.
I think that's a really important point to underscore. That is that at least a third of people who are infected with the virus don't have any symptoms. They're asymptomatic. So they never develop symptoms. And it could be higher. I mean, there are some studies that suggest that it could be 40 and even 50%, but it's probably at least a third who are totally asymptomatic, even though they're infected and never develop symptoms. Now, it's important to note that those people who are asymptomatic, no symptoms, and are infected with the virus, when their viral load reaches its peak, i.e., after they've been infected, typically what happens is you're infected and you've got just a little bit of virus in your system. And then after several days, the amount of virus in your system starts to increase. And it'll usually peak on average at about day 4 or 5, or maybe day 6. And then it'll start coming down. And that's even true with people who are asymptomatic. And when they're at that peak, they're shedding a lot of virus. They've got a lot of virus in their nose and a lot of virus in their mouth. And so when they're just talking, they're not feeling any symptoms at all. When they're talking, they're releasing particles into the air that you can breathe in and get infected from. So even if they don't have any symptoms, they can still cause infection. And, so just wanted to relay that.
Another question here. Can you speak about recommendations from the CDC and whether community-wide testing is in conflict with recommendations by the CDC?
Great question. I think that in general, no. It depends on why you're doing community-wide testing. We don't recommend a test just for the sake of a test, but we are. There can be significant asymptomatic spread, and particularly if you've got a community that's got some cases, identifying them very quickly. We think of some of the villages in a very similar way that we think of other congregate living facilities where people live close together, and we recommend regular testing in a setting of an outbreak in those situations. So we see the recommendations that the YK has been implementing for testing to be consistent with the CDC guidance.